What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Milestone for Rocket Lab. After the space startup successfully launched its small Electron rocket for the first time from U.S. soil.
3, 2, 1, liftoff.
The mission, Virginia is for launch lovers, lifted off from NASA's flight facility on Wallops Island in Virginia, delivering to orbit 3 radio frequency monitoring satellites for Hawkeye 360, another startup and a Manifest Space guest. Peter Beck says it's just the beginning.
For the longest time, there's always been this promise, right, where this demand was going to come. And when you see large corporations like Amazon and Apple and so on and so forth, it's very, very clear that these are mission-driven applications that actually need to get built. Gone are the days of the promise, and now it's as it always has been in our view, it's all about execution.
I spoke with Beck, Rocket Lab CEO and founder, fresh off the launch, about the launch business, the space stock sell-off, and even Venus. I'm Morgan Brennan, and this is Manifest Space. Well, Peter, thanks so much for joining me today, and congratulations, since I know you are freshly off this successful launch, your first from U.S. soil. I guess just walk me through the launch and why it is so meaningful to Rocket Lab.
Yeah, no, thanks very much. As you mentioned, this is our first launch off the LC2 pad in Wallops Island, Virginia. And I guess that's important because we're bringing an entirely new capability to the nation. So, we are the most successful small launcher globally, and it's great to bring that rapid response capability to the nation and to Wallops Island.
How many launches do you anticipate doing from Wallops Island now versus New Zealand? Is that going to change dynamics and increase the cadence?
I think we'll do about 15 launches this year. I mean, we're up to, that was the 33rd launch. And we'll do something in the order of, 4 to 6 launches out of LC2 this year, and, something like 15 or more launches this year in total between both the launch sites. And that cadence will continue to grow over time.
Reusability. How is that process going, and what can we expect in terms of next milestones around that?
Yeah, so we're pretty much there on reusability. We're able to successfully re-enter the rocket pretty much every time now. Reusable rockets are coming down the production line as standard items, so every kind of 2 or 3 are reusable vehicles. And we'll look to close out the last part of our reusability program where we actually catch this thing under a helicopter. Obviously this year, and it'll become standard operation this year as well. So, the reusability program in Electron is drawing to a conclusion.
And then, of course, you're continuing to develop Neutron, which is your medium lift rocket. Updates there?
Yeah, so that program's coming along well. So you can probably see some images of giant composite tanks coming together, first engine component hot fires and whatnot. So we're looking to get that on the pad still by the end of 2024. And that will be a significant milestone, and also significant capability as we look to provide a really competitive launch vehicle for that medium to heavy class.
And I guess just walk me through the economics of the small rocket, the Electron, that's currently in use and service versus what medium lift is going to bring to the game for Rocket Lab.
Yeah, well, you can think about launches kind of bisecting into two segments. One, you've got medium to heavy lift, which is useful for things like human spaceflight and large constellation buildouts. Then you have the small side where Electron serves, where you have small dedicated satellites that can't it's not financially viable for them to ride on a big rocket as a rideshare because they don't get to go where they need to go to actually provide a commercial service. So that's the niche they fill. So between electron and neutron, we address something like 90% of all of the launch requirements out there. And if we look at, you know, what's happening in the industry, you've got a lot of large constellations coming to market in that sort of 25 to 27 timeframe. And, you know, there is a massive deficit of launch around that timeframe. So we think the timing for Neutron is good. And Electron continues to be, you know, the preferred and stable small launcher globally.
Yeah, I've had this conversation with other folks in the industry, Tori Bruno over at ULA, for example, just a couple of weeks ago, the fact that we've gone from this environment where there was too much supply to now not enough supply for all the demand that is coming online over these next couple of years. That is, you know, essentially just a, for lack of a better term, it was like explosion of satellite constellations that now need to go to space.
We don't like to use that word in this industry.
I know. I couldn't think of a better, more dramatic word. A flurry yes, of satellite exactly. constellations, thousands and thousands of satellites that now need to go to space. Do you see it the same way in terms of capacity and more demand than capacity?
Yeah, I mean, for the longest time, there's always been this promise, right, where you know, this demand was going to come, and look, when you see large corporations like Amazon and Apple and so on and so forth, it's very, very clear that these are mission driven applications that actually need to get built. Gone are the days of the promise, and now it's as it always has been in our view, it's all about execution. And you know, for the longest time, we just had Electron. We stated we were never going to build a larger launch vehicle because it wasn't obvious that this demand was going to come. But the moment it became obvious that the demand was going to be there, we moved quickly to make sure that we're going to field a new vehicle in that time frame to really take advantage of the, you know, the requirement of so much launch.
Of course, the demand's coming, but we're also seeing, I guess, a shakeout, you could say, within the industry, given the fact that there were so many startups, so many folks getting funding to go out and start rocket companies, many of them unfortunately not successful, or at least not successful yet. Do you see consolidation afoot, and do you see a situation where, you know, the winners are kind of now, Rocket Lab obviously being one of them, are now emerging in this new environment where less capital is available?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, there was a period here that was just totally wacky, where, you know, you have a PowerPoint and a shiny smile and you could raise literally hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, what we're seeing is kind of, you know, as you say, a bit of a shakeout where, you know, PowerPoints and promises now have to translate into execution. And execution is way harder than PowerPoints and promises. And, you know, I'm quite happy that there's a capital constrained environment. I mean, Rocket Lab is generating, you know, a couple of $100 million of revenue a year, and we have lots of cash reserves and a real company. So we you know, I think this is a good time for us because this is where you know, the sort out from the real companies to the, you know, to the hopeful companies really really happens.
Yeah, and yet all the space stocks, all the so-called pure play space stocks have been selling off, including Rocket Lab. And I realize stocks bouncing now, you know, with the successful launch from Wallops Island, but it's been pretty across the board in terms of investors, at least in the public market, selling out.
Yeah, no, it's been brutal. And I would say that there's no discrimination between a company really that has completely failed and a company that's exceeded all its targets. And I guess for us, that's a little bit frustrating. But the great thing about public markets is ultimately they're very efficient and they sort out the winners and the losers. So I think it's a very, very, you know, kind of different time in the markets right now. And ultimately, in the long term, you know, things will get sorted out. But, you know, I would say space as a sector has taken a pretty decent beating, as is a lot of tech sectors, let's be honest. But I don't think it's helped by the, you know, the large number of the space stocks just not delivering on what they said they were going to do.
Yeah. Meantime, I mean, you're launching satellites and payloads to space. You're also helping to build them. Just talk to me about that business, because it seems to me like there's a lot of opportunity for that to grow very quickly, and I'd imagine it's pretty profitable, maybe higher margin business than launch services.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, we're really not good at names at Rocket Lab. That's why we name our launches kind of funny names, because we kind of acknowledge that we're not very good at names. And ironically, I shouldn't have really called the company Rocket Lab, because 2/3 of our revenue come from, as you point out, our space systems division, where we're building satellites. But the company's vision was always to build rockets and satellites and ultimately provide services from space. It has been for a long time. So, you know, we started building our space systems division back in 2019. And now we have, something like 20 satellites being manufactured. We have two satellites we're building for NASA to go to Mars. We're building 14 spacecraft for the Globalstar MDA Apple constellation. And these are like half-ton minivan size spacecraft. These aren't CubeSats. And then we have solar businesses and reaction wheel businesses, a whole lot of space components businesses. But ultimately, what we're trying to do here is provide an end-to-end service, one-stop space shop, where a customer can come to us. And not only can we build their satellite, we can put it on orbit and in many cases even operate it.
Have you been immune to supply chain issues? I mean, I have so many conversations with so many companies in aerospace and defense, and it seems to still continue to be an issue. I mean, is that the case with what you're doing?
Not so much. Look, the supply chain team will tell me the opposite, because I think they're incredibly active in ensuring that the line never stops. But, we're so vertically integrated, it's literally raw billets of aluminum and carbon fiber in one end and rockets and spacecraft out the other. So, we've had our fair share of running around, sourcing chips and whatnot, but it hasn't impacted production in any way. And, being vertically integrated, if there is a microchip that is no longer available, like the design and R&D teams who built the piece of avionics in the first place are there. So, to go and substitute a new component and go through all the qual testing and reacceptance is painful, but it's possible. Whereas if you're just buying a box off aerospace company, then you don't have that luxury. Like you're completely reliant on them providing that box. So I'd say our vertical integration has really been the saving grace around supply chain issues, but we've been able to manage it really.
And how about the labor piece of it? It seems like there's so much more excitement now from young adults and students and people coming into the workforce around this emerging space economy and this idea of commercial space. But I also realize that it's a tight labor market right now.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah. I mean, and you can kind of complain about it, or you can do something about it. And, we run apprenticeship programs. We have a space ambassadors program. We've been to hundreds of schools, and there's thousands of kids signed up to our Space Ambassadors program. And, right back to primary school kids, because you really have to get in early to change people's perceptions and careers. So, we do a lot in developing new talent, and we have PhD programs and so on and so forth. So we have we really try and, plant the seeds and water the shrub, for sure. But no doubt, it's a tight labor market. I would say that it's easing a little bit, especially some of the large tech companies. You've seen pretty significant layoffs in software areas and things like that. So there are some areas that are starting to free up a bit. But it's fair to say that it's a tight labor market. This is call me a recession cheerleader, which is probably not the right thing to say, but this is where. The companies are going to be successful, and the companies that ultimately not are going to get sorted out this year. So I think that'll take a little bit of pressure out of the labor market. But like I say, no point in complaining. You have to go and create new talent for the long haul.
Space, secular growth. I mean, it seems like everything we're talking about, that this is going to be, even if you were to see a recession, that this is an area where there's money being put to work, there's talent being put to work, there's new technologies being put to work, whether it's Rocket Lab or I guess looking at the industry as it does go through this, to use the word again, shakeout. It seems like the future is, and maybe I'm a cheerleader, but it seems like the future is very optimistic.
Yeah. Look, I mean, historically, the space industry has been relatively immune to recessions. In some cases, it actually grows for various reasons. So no, I mean, it's tremendous growth in the sector, and I don't see that slowing at any time. And you know, I've been working in the industry for a long time, and like I mentioned at the start, like there's always this promise of you know, large constellations and huge growth and whatnot, and we're seeing that. I'm probably the cheerleader too, but I mean, at the end of the day, I'm also very practical from an economic standpoint, and you know, every one of our business unit continues to grow really, really strongly. And I would say that we're lucky because we kind of have a really good pulse on the industry, because we supply lots of components into to lots of satellites. I mean, last year we supplied the plan for the space systems division was that everything that goes to space should have a Rocket Lab logo on it. Doesn't matter if we launched it, doesn't matter if we built it, everything that goes to space should have a Rocket Lab logo. And of all the addressable markets, you know, that we can tap into, last year 36% of everything launched had a Rocket Lab logo on it. So we get a sense of the industry's pulse by how many orders for long lead time items are being placed, and that's continued to grow just month on month, year on year. So it's definitely strong growth within the industry, which is exciting. But you know, as I said before, it's all about execution.
It's fascinating. I am curious, given the fact that you do have your pulse on so much of the industry, and you are supplying so many parts into so many different satellites, what you think of all the deal making we're seeing on the satellite side of the industry as well, because it does feel like everybody's coming together. Everybody's trying to bulk up. Everybody's trying to, leverage constellations across different orbits. Just your thoughts on where this goes.
Yeah, I think that's a natural evolution, right? I mean, there's some capabilities that aren't sustainable on their own, so they need to be augmented with other capabilities. As the wave of growth is getting larger, and especially in that sort of 27 timeframe, I think, everybody's posturing and positioning to be in the best position to serve that. Rocket Lab being no different. Like, if you look at the acquisitions we made, I mean, we came public and then did three acquisitions. Don't recommend that. That's incredibly painful. But it was the right time to build that and obtain that critical capability to position ourselves to be in the best place to really take advantage of the market's growth and the opportunities that are in it. So I think that's largely what you're seeing is a consolidation of the players that can't stand on their own two feet, and then a consolidation to ensure that ultimately you're one of the winners at the end.
Are you still acquisitive right now?
Am I still what? Sorry.
Are you still acquisitive? Like the fact I know you've done a series of acquisitions, but as you do see the prices come off of some companies, and you see maybe potentially in coming weeks, coming months, et cetera, some assets I would imagine hit the sale block. Would you be interested?
Well, I mean, the way we think about acquisitions is very, very strategic. If you look at the ones we've done, they're all companies we work with for a year. They all have one thing in the common: 100% mission success. And that's kind of a bar that you need to be cleared. So, if there's some distress assets that haven't proven that, then we're not going to be interested. The way we think about acquisitions is very strategic, and quite often they're not for sale. We start that process, but needless to say, we keep a healthy book of things and things going on. So at any one time, we'll be looking at two or three different companies, but there's nothing yet that obviously in the last 6 months that we felt we needed to do. It's an active part of our plan, and we continue to hope that we'll close more acquisitions here in the coming time.
Yeah, I know I'm talking to you a lot about business stuff and strategy right now, but I want to talk to you. I do want to talk to you about vision. So last time you were on Manifest Space, we talked about Venus, and I want to know how that is going.
Yeah, well, Venus for us is an internally funded project. It's a life finding mission, and you know, it's definitely a nights and a weekends project. So so it gets the least amount of attention across the company. But it's very much a passion project, and I think you know, it's aimed at answering the biggest question in my mind for human races: are we the only ones out there? And I think while it's probably, you know, pretty sure that we're not the only life form in the universe, because the universe is very big. If you want to take a scientific approach, we have not proven that, and this is what the Venus Life Finding Mission is all about. And with the launch of our capstone mission to the moon last year, we cemented and demonstrated that we could build a spacecraft that can, you know, travel outside Earth's gravitational field. And you know, that spacecraft, our Photon, lunar Photon, right now is a few million miles away from Earth and on its way to a heliocentric orbit around the sun. So we can get out there, we can go and explore planets, which is super cool now. And you know, the Venus mission is about, can we get to Venus and super high risk, you know, super low probability, but also, you know, something I think is important to do is let's get there and have a look in the atmosphere and determine if there's life there or not. I think that would be a great thing to do, and maybe we'd find it, maybe we're not. I think, you know, the chances of finding it are extremely low, but I think it's a big enough and an important enough thing to give it a crack.
What's your time frame? When do you think that happens?
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping to launch this year. I think that will be unlikely given how much, you know, real work we've got to do this year. So we can't divert any resources off actually delivering real customers payloads to passion projects. But you know, we have multiple opportunities there. There's planetary alignments every couple of years. So you know, last year was a big milestone for us to demonstrate that we could build a spacecraft that could do it. And then, you know, this year it'll be more about can we build the probe and the various other pieces, you know, to make that happen. So, you know, we don't have any firm timeline. Like I say, this is a very much a nights and a weekends kind of over a pizza fashion project.
Oh, it's so cool though. So just finally, I want to ask you about, because it's been another big, we're coming off another big year with a lot of technological leaps and bounds, where space flight, space travel, exploration, where the technologies themselves, where we've had these amazing moments. And I'm just wondering what, if it's a technology, if it's a discovery, what you're most excited about or you think is like really the coolest and most meaningful?
Oh gosh, that's a deep question. I can't really say anything else, but I mean, I think the neutron launch vehicle that we're developing is wildly different to any launch vehicle out there. And if you look at what it looks like, you know, it doesn't even look the same. I think you know, naturally we think it's going to be a successful product, but you know, as that project starts to come together and we start to make hardware and we start to realize, and all the things you write down on paper and you think, or on a whiteboard and you think are a great idea, and actually see them starting to come to fruition, it's going, oh, this is going to be really good. So that's probably, I think, the most exciting thing. And look, the medium lift is well served right now with a very reliable vehicle, but there's one. You know, we aim to bring something to market that will give that a run for its money. And you know, it's designed from day one to be really, really highly, rapidly reusable, and I think that's a fundamental difference that enable it to do some pretty special things. And you know, once again, in true Rocket Lab fashion, it's not like a boring metallic tube. It's a funky looking carbon fiber thing that that, you know, has a whole lot of new technology in it, but not new technology to be cool, new technology because it's fundamentally going to move the ball.
That does it for this episode of Manifest Space.
Make sure you never miss a launch by searching Manifest Space wherever you get your podcasts and by following the Squawk on the Street podcast. For more on the space race, be sure to watch Squawk on the Street on CNBC. I'm Morgan Brennan.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.